This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 14 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I am your co-host, JT. With me, as always, my partner, good old Will from Texas. Will, how you doing?
I'm great, man. I am eagerly. Did I say that right?
Eagler. I like eagler.
Eagler.
That'll be our word.
Yeah, okay. No, don't even edit that out either, man. People are used to me screwing up words.
Especially
I am eagerly awaiting the new Star Wars movie next week.
Yes, that's right. You're a big Star Wars buff, so we'll be sure to get your thoughts on that in our next episode. We'll be looking forward to hearing all about it. I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm not a diehard. I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to wait for the crowds to dissipate a bit, so I'll probably see it sometime at the end of the month when things aren't as crazy. But I understand the allure for the diehards like you. You get your tickets already?
Oh, yeah. We're going the night of the opening next Thursday at 11:45 at night, so I'll have a rough day at work the next day.
Very much so, and we'll be sure to get your thoughts. And with us, of course, he missed the last episode with an illness, so Brad Woodling had stepped in and did our PA job that he usually does, and that is our producer, Mr. Daniel McGinn. Dan, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, guys. It's good to be healthy again. I'm also very eager to be with you all this week, and funny you guys mentioned Star Wars. I'm actually in my Chewbacca outfit right now as we speak. Basil looks a little bit like Harrison Ford. We're, just role-playing over here.
All right, we're off to a good start.
Hold on. That's some creepy-ass role-playing right there. Right?
Yeah, because you would think he would be Chewbacca, right? I mean, obviously.
So what'd you do? Just take off your shirt and automatically you're Chewbacca, or what?
Let's put it this way. The sweater vests that I wear quite often aren't the only sweaters that I have going on a daily basis.
All right. Let's kill this.
Will, you would be excited, though, to have been with me at the Providence Friars game yesterday because it was Star Wars night. So they had a costume contest. They had Star Wars music playing. There was Chewbacca in the crowd. There was Prince Leia in the crowd. There was a big Star Wars theme at the dunk last night.
No, man, I'm not one who's going to get dressed up. I'm going to beat up a couple of midgets who are dressed like Jawas and steal their tickets.
There you go. We'll beat up Basil. So, all right, that's enough Star Wars. Why don't we go ahead? And Daniel, why don't you tell us what is challenge number one for today?
Guys, it's been a while, so let's do it again. Another live watch.
All right. Live watch is, of course, where we live watch a match and talk about it. And you all can go ahead and pause if you want to get this thing queued up on your own. And then when you come back, we'll tell you when to hit play. But the match we're watching, and we'll add a little info for us, but is for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Buddy Rogers is your champion, taking on Pat O'Connor from June 30th. 1961. So this is on YouTube. The link is present in the shell on PlayStimulation.com in case you couldn't find it on your own. You can go ahead and just click that and play from there. But we're going to go ahead and count you in with 3, 2. All right, we're off and running. World title match. Now, Will, do you want to tell us a little bit where this match takes place? Any of the details we should know as we get fired up?
Okay, well, it was in Comiskey Park in Chicago. At the time, it had 38,622 fans. Okay, And this was a professional wrestling attendance record that lasted until Toronto's the big event in 1986. And the Wikipedia page says that it had a $148,000 gate, which was a record that stuck around for almost 20 years. So it was billed as the match of the century. And the reason I wanted to watch this was, one, because, you know, I think it's always nice to step out of our wheelhouse. By no means am I an expert on 1950s and 1960s wrestling. You know, the 1980s, that's kind of like my forte there. But this is, it's a famous match. It's a world title match. And Pat O'Connor is one of those guys that when I went through my discovery of old wrestlers, he's a guy that just always stood out as like pretty great. Mm-hmm. You know, amazing punches, amazing, I don't want to say psychology, it sounds too vague, but just the sense of knowing what to do at the right time. Pace would probably be a better word. And on the screen there, we just saw the announcer just introduce Buddy Rogers, the original Nature Boy. So it almost feels like that vibe of, you have the Hollywood, you know, the cocky bleach blonde Rogers against kind of the salt of the earth O'Connor.
Right. So obviously, I mean, based on the crowd reaction alone, Rogers is clearly the big time heel in this match. Pat O'Connor seems to get a little bit better of a reaction. Who are the guys in the corners here now? Because that the guy was wearing,
I have no idea,
quite
man.
The
I
outfit.
Have no idea.
The guy with Buddy Rogers had quite the suit on.
I don't know that much about it, man. I have no idea. You'd have to get my buddy Chris Zellner, the wrestling historian, on a show for something like that. You notice though that I guess they didn't have hair transplants, because everybody but Rogers has a horseshoe hairdo here.
Right. Yeah, well, that was the look back in the early 60s.
And there's a lot of Vern Gagne looking people in this screen right now.
Yes. They all the guy. I want to know who this man of the second is for Buddy Rogers. He looks like Tackleberry from Police Academy with this ridiculous jacket and bow tie on.
That's awesome. I have no idea.
Do we know who's on commentary though? I'm trying to figure that out. It sounds like Gordon. I'm sure it's not him, but it does sound like him.
It does, yeah.
All right, so Buddy Rogers is the champ.
Buddy Rogers is the him. Yeah, he's the champ. He's in the with the blonde hair, and O'Connor is the guy who's rapidly losing his hair.
Yes.
And by the 70s, his hair is gone. Like it's just a horseshoe.
Now, how long was he active for, O'Connor?
Oh,
was
God.
It long into the 70s or?
He was, I think I've seen matches from his into the early 80s, maybe in St. Louis, like against the Von Erich boys. It says right here on Wikipedia that he debuted in 1950 and retired in 1990.
Wow.
Yeah. So obviously if he was in 1990, it was probably spot shows or, you know, doing legend spots, you know, that kind of thing. And Buddy Rogers, he died in 1992. So.
Right. And this is obviously pre the WWF split, right? It was, that's like 63, I think. Was that a couple years after this?
Sounds about right.
Yeah,
I think so.
So this is still just pure NWA, and Buddy doing a little bit of stalling in between the kind of the lockup and the early grapples here. Was this any, you know, was it part of any particular territory?
Did you see O'Connor's punch?
Yes. On point.
Well, it's in Chicago, so I mean, it's probably just National Wrestling Alliance,
right.
You know? You know, I mean, the guy's probably toured, and I'm just throwing out guesses here, and that, you know, they're probably big marquee guys that toured around and, you know, were big enough names to pack almost 40,000 people into the park.
So big lockup here, and yeah, you're right. The punch by O'Connor was sharp, really on point to the face, and even this selling, it felt very real. The selling from
now this looks like a basic lockup, and it is. I mean, this is like one of those old classic. If you want to make fun of 1960s or 70s wrestling, this is a classic lockup. But what I really like about this is that even in a simple lockup, you know, something that you can see thousands of times throughout wrestling in the early days, there's a real sense of struggle there, and mm-hmm. I just appreciate stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, Buddy took him down. He's got the armbar on, and the crowd into everything right here. I mean, just into the battle, the strength, test of strength. And I mean, like you said, this crowd came out to see this match. I mean, they'd be pretty fired up.
And not surprisingly, like wrestling throughout the ages, if you look at the crowd, 90%, 95% male.
Yep, and a lot of nerds like today, too. A
lot of nerds.
So Buddy using the hair, one guy in the front was just freaking out, pointing at it. He cheated and used the hair.
Yeah, funny, guys. No signs in the crowd for guys pimping their websites or their blogs.
No, you can't wrestle chance going on yet either. So we know we're not in Full Sail University.
Right. No tater tot chance.
Yes. I love the slacks on this official.
Nice. I love that you just said slacks.
Well, we're in the 60s, right? No dungarees here at the show. Everyone in slacks.
I tell you what I do like, and I legitimately like. I like the old wrestling boots with the socks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just like that style, man. I think it's awesome. You know, I wish more guys would kind of go back to kind of that, like, old school style. Or at least somebody. You know, like, the vaudevillains almost kind of, like, overdo it. You know, like,
right.
With the handlebar mustache and, like, you know, the... But I don't think that they're trying to emulate this time period anyway, but still.
And the crowd, you know,
man, it looks... Well, look at the way he's twisting that arm, mm-hmm. man. That looks ugly.
And the crowd is going batshit as soon as O'Connor took hold.
I mean, it looks like he's trying to break his arm with that arm lock mm-hmm. there, man. That's a nasty-looking arm. Like, in a way, and you know what? He probably doesn't feel a thing. That's the crazy thing, right?
Right.
Is that these guys were such great workers, you know. That Rogers probably doesn't feel a thing. And doing simple things like just pulling them by the arm into the middle of the ring. I really wish that when guys would lock holds on, whether it's a chin lock, a headlock, an arm bar, an arm lock, that it looked like it hurt, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that one of the biggest criticisms we have of Cena's STF is that mm-hmm. it doesn't look like it could hurt a fly.
Right. Rock Sharpshooter was always one that was like that as well.
Well, I think the Sharpshooter move in general, unless it was like Choshu who was doing it. But like, I never thought Sting looked like he was really hurting somebody with the Sharpshooter.
No, I mean, the Hearts both did pretty well with it, but the Rocks was abysmal. I mean, he would like hold the angles and lean forward. I mean, it was ugly. But anyway, we digress. So O'Connor really working this arm over and over as the crowd just really is into it. Oh, look at that guy smoking a cig in the front row.
Isn't that awesome? With his plaid shirt. He's wearing sunglasses. He's awesome. That's
well,
my
outside,
favorite.
I guess.
That's my favorite new fan.
I'm guessing during the day, did they have lights at the park yet in 61? I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea, man. That was a kind of a crazy body slam there,
right?
Man.
It's a throw.
It's awesome. Yeah. I'm kind of digging this match, man.
Yeah, it's really smooth. Just everything's fluid. I mean,
hey, so is the fan drinking coffee? Okay, he's drinking like coffee or something. Okay, I thought at first it was his little spittoon, like a little spit cup.
Those are some glasses he's rocking.
But him and his Eugene Levy buddy next to him,
right?
You know,
we have a
pack of Pall Malls in his pocket.
We have a live watch party series here at PlayStation.com, and they'll always do like most 90s guy. And I think who's the most 60s guy in this audience, I think. Or most 50s, I guess, still. We're not really fully
into
the
60s. No, this 60s is 61.
Yeah, but it's more, like, the look that we're seeing from a lot of these people here is, like, late 50s, kind of.
Yeah, well, what did they say, man? The 60s didn't really start until JFK was assassinated and the Beatles came over, right?
Yep. It was still kind of the hangover of the 50s style. Because if you look at these guys, a lot of them have, like, the buzz cut or the thick glasses and the buttoned-up shirts.
Any one of them could have been my dad, to be honest with you. 61, he would have been an 18-year-old. Yeah, he would have been, well, he'd been 17, 18 years old. My dad was quite a character. Yeah, but he looked like one of those guys, you know. He had the, what do they call those prescription glasses? The that style, like what the military-style glasses. What were they called?
Oh, like
the
aviator or whatever? Sunglasses. You mean
no, like not sunglasses. Yeah. I'm talking about the actual like prescription glasses. There's a term for them. Either way, like that's kind of like what my dad like. You know, always had like that slicked hairdo. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think my dad ever left like the 50s. You know, I think really, you know, maybe some sideburns in the 70s. you know, maybe a mullet, you know, after he retired, like in the late 80s or something, but I don't know.
Whoever this announcer is, name dropped Vince J. McMahon, the promoter out of New York, so I'm not sure what context he was talking about, but so still just battling both.
So the announcer dropped McMahon's name?
Yeah, I didn't hear the context. He just said Vince McMahon, the promoter up in New York or something like that. He said along those lines. So
I'm guessing then that was probably Rogers. Wasn't Rogers a big New York guy?
Yeah. I didn't know if he had been heavily before. I guess he was before the split, but he must be. He must have been predominantly there if they're name-dropping him during the match. But he looking a rear chin lock here after more of a struggle with the arm.
Yeah, but what I'm okay with this chin lock right here, the guy, O'Connor, isn't just sitting there letting him put a chin lock in.
Right.
He's grabbing his face. He's trying to move around, figure out a way out of it. I don't mind holds at all in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as the other guy is trying to find a way out of it. Oh, man, that punch looked like it knocked out a tooth. Look at that. I mean, tell me O'Connor doesn't have beautiful punches. And when he was 50 years old in the late 70s, he still had those great punches. This is a nasty knee, man.
There he goes. First fall, Buddy Rogers. Of course, best of three as always for NWA title matches.
And just for people expecting those big back and forth false count finishes, you do not get that here. What you got here was Buddy Rogers getting whipped into the corner. O'Connor charges in. Buddy Rogers puts a knee up that lands in O'Connor's face. O'Connor goes down, and Buddy gets the clean 1-2-3.
Mm-hmm. It was a hard hit too. It wasn't so it didn't feel like anticlimactic or out of nowhere. Like it made when you watch the flow of the match, it made sense.
I like how O'Connor is really selling that he's still pretty banged up after that shot. It's not one of those things where he takes a bad hit, takes the fall, but then is bounced back up and we start all over again.
Right.
It's almost like a boxing match. Guy takes a hit, gets knocked down, bell rings. He stumbles back into the corner. The seconds, you know, get him all back up and get him settled. But at the same time, you know he's not 100% as we begin the next fall.
Look at the wrestler's sound off here. So.
I have no idea. What is this, the wrestler sound off?
The Kangaroos.
There you go.
And Red Berry.
I had no idea that they had a little commercial break in the middle of the match.
Yeah, a little interview. They're chatting with the champions. Kangaroos are the champions here, he said.
There is still a lot of hair missing in this group right now.
Yes. I do like, are they wearing polo shirts with ties or are they button downs?
But let me ask you this. Doesn't this feel like the time, though, when all of these guys were tough guys?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it just really feels that way that, you know, this is a time when bar fights. This is when a time when, like, a guy who's, like, 5'4" and 130 pounds can kick your ass with some badass MMA. This is a time when, you know, you had to have Popeye forearms and, you know, some liquid courage in you, man. And it just feels like that era.
For sure. Yeah, even these guys, the Kangaroos, just look with the name the Kangaroos, you picture maybe, like, more high flying type guys or whatever. These guys look like right out of a western, real gruff looking.
Alligator wrestlers. I don't know. I think maybe we're just romanticizing the time period, you know, or maybe I am. You know, I don't know.
Well, I don't even know if we're romanticizing. I think we're just speaking the truth about it. They look tough. I mean, they look like badasses.
Yeah.
You know, everyone has so far.
Yeah. You know, it's weird what people take from these time periods that, you know, were around before we were alive. But, like, for me, the biggest thing about this time period would be, like, the nuclear bomb PSAs,
mm-hmm.
the duck and cover deal. Like, you know, oh, well, kids, if you hear the nuclear bomb alarm, just go run sitting under your desk. And, you know, the little turtle does his duck and cover and... Yeah, well, the Korean War was 50 to 53,
right?
So you know, you had the Cold War. I mean, the Cold War is in full bloom here, right? I mean, so
were those guys wearing bolo ties?
I think so. Yeah, they definitely had looked like they had polos with bolos.
Okay. Will, do you have a bolo tie?
Never in my life.
Being from Texas? Okay.
Bolo.
Just make it sure.
Dude, you know what, man? Like, the only time I wear ties are job interviews and funerals. That's it.
Yeah, well, you didn't say bolo tie. So O'Connor coming out hot here for the second fall. Forces Buddy into the corner.
Hey, you know what? I think I do have a polo tie, though. A legit, you know? I think I do.
Like a Johnny Polo?
Like Polo, the clothing company?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like a tie that Raven gave you?
Yeah, not happen.
Okay.
So here we go. Rogers is going back to the arm here.
Mm-hmm. And Rogers definitely has like that kind of, I mean, it's hard to tell with the black and white, but that bronze dish, like, beach body kind of look, just from the, even, you know, through the black and white, that's what it looks like to me, with the kind of blonde hair. It looks like he's got a tan, kind of the sun leathered skin.
Well, there's no surprise, right? That, you know, this is the guy who Ric Flair patterned himself after. You know, there's a clear reason he patterned himself after Buddy Rogers. Rogers was huge, man. I don't know. How long did he hold the title? Wasn't it like some obscene amount of time?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we should really figure that out, right? Like,
yeah.
He was NWA World Heavyweight Champion one time.
So O'Connor trying to break out of this hole. He's been spending the last few minutes trying to break out of it. I lost it there for a second. Will, did you say how long he had it for?
I did not. Okay. I had no idea. I was waiting for you to tell me.
Oh, okay.
You know.
We'll let Dan look it up. He's the producer. Dan, find out how long Buddy Rogers was champion for. And then find out when the WWF thing was. I think it was 63, I believe.
Yeah, this is a relief. We don't have to not say WWF this week.
I know, right?
Look, man, I like the way he was stretching them there, man. The,
mm-hmm.
I'm digging this match, you know. I wish there were a little bit more high spots, or at least, you know, we had more of O'Connor punching. But, you know, the crowd's eating it up, man.
All right, guys, Buddy Rogers had the NWA title one time for 573 days, it says.
Oh, there you go. So about a year and a half. Okay. Yeah, like a year and three quarters.
Sure.
Pat O'Connor, incidentally, had it for 903 days.
Jeez. And when was the WWWF split? That's too many W's, I think. WWWF.
Now, I'd be interested to see if this legwork even plays. But look at the way he's twisting that foot.
Mm-hmm.
That foot is at a 90,
past it.
90-degree angle. Yeah, that's nuts.
All right, before somebody throws something at their radio, the National Wrestling Alliance, WWF, left it, and it was April 25th, 1963.
There you go.
In a fictitional tournament from Rio de Janeiro.
Yes. So almost a little under 2 years from this match here is when they split and launched their own belt. And Buddy Rogers threw it down and said, you know, just like Shane Douglas, Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, Dad is my witness, whatever the hell he says. And yeah. And he christens the Extreme Championship Wrestling title. So still working the leg, but he's still in agony.
Yeah, I think the fact that the crowd is so engaged in this, you know, it honestly doesn't feel like they're just resting.
Right.
It actually feels, and you know, I mean, like I said, this is not like the best match I've seen from this era. My buddy Phil Schneider found a match from a couple of guys from France that did just amazing stuff for like the 1960s. Those guys were jumping around like little Mexican jumping beans, and they were from France. I mean, it was awesome.
And these guys aren't sitting in the holds for that long. I mean, even if you clock it, the longest like rest period here is like maybe 30, 40 seconds at the most. And that little flurry was really cool where Buddy had a drop kick, and then O'Connor kind of rebounded off the rope and took him right back down.
That's the classic standard style, right? Of, you know, working the hold, escaping the hold, And then the guy either, you know, reapplies the hold after a quick flurry, or the other guy counters and he takes over, you know.
Yeah, and Buddy's facials are really good, too, while he's in this hold. Yeah. He's, like, almost looking to the crowd. And the crowd's engaged in it. I mean, that's a big part of it. They're connecting with him through their engagement. So it's not, you know, they're not sitting there looking at their phones or trying to, you know, get themselves over. Like, they're locked into what's going on. And
I really like that reversal. Yeah, I really like that reversal, man.
And he decked him hard, too.
Yeah, sure. Buddy, just for people who may be listening while driving or something, Buddy Rogers had his leg hooked by O'Connor. So he grabs O'Connor's head, pulls O'Connor back, you know, while he's on the mat, to make him let go of the leg. O'Connor ends up giving a Buddy a cravat and then just punching him square in the face. And now O'Connor is on the attack, punching Buddy in the face. And there goes a
shoulder block. And O'Connor's done a couple of nip-ups, which have been cool, too. And is this going to be it? Yep. O'Connor gets fall with the roll-up.
That's the famous O'Connor roll.
Yep.
That's the O'Connor roll.
I'll tell you, his punches have been the most impressive part of the match so far. That and the crowd engagement to me have been the highlights.
No doubt. And you know me, man. Jerry Lawler's my favorite wrestler. I think he's the greatest puncher of all time. I could watch a match for 15 minutes where guys are just punching each other in the face. In fact, I have, and I enjoy it, you know. Seriously, I don't need guys jumping off ropes or doing fancy flip moves, man. You gave me a couple of guys who want to punch each other in the face, I'm sold, man.
Well, O'Connor's nip-ups are really cool, I thought, those couple of times, too, because that really got the crowd going. It's a simple move, and he looks good because he's kind of a, you know, seems like he's a bigger guy. It's hard to tell, really, with the framing on this match.
Yeah. Oh, no, O'Connor was he was pretty set, man. You figure, I'm about 6 foot, you know. O'Connor would have, like, made me look small, you know. But that's a lot of those old guys, right? They were, like, they appear much smaller than they actually are in person.
A lot of times too, they're hunched over. Like that's always my picture of Luthez. Like I know he's a tall guy, but he was always kind of hunched over. Like that's just the fighting stance of the era, you know? So I think that's part of why they look a little bit smaller too. Cause they're always kind of leaning over in these holds and never standing straight up tall, you know?
Well, it's kind of like if you like it. Oh man, Buddy Rogers, that's awesome. Buddy
like
Rogers doing the
something.
Strut. Yeah.
But he really, that was a great way that he stopped short of that punch and really twisted out of it. Unfold a piece here. So we're about, 23 minutes into the clip, minus the intro and the, we didn't get an official clock of the match, but we're probably around 20 minutes, I would think, when you take out the wrestler's corner and the intros.
Yeah, sure. You know, maybe a little minute or so more than that, but
nah. It's had my attention the whole time. How about you, Dan? I mean, this is kind of new stuff for you too. What are you enjoying the trip?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is good, as Will was saying, to get out of the comfort zone. We're finding it with our PTBN Network Adventure. You know, these are stuff that maybe you don't go out of your way to go see, but we're watching it and commenting on it. And when you just kind of get too far into the common modern day product, you kind of forget where the roots came from and what a quality wrestling match looks like after a while. When you keep watching stuff like Spot Fest and, you know, Train Wrecks and Demolition Derbies.
And if you look at them right now, they just rolled out of the ring. And back then, that was almost like the signal, like, oh, this is going to end in either a count out or a DQ or something, you know. But, you know, they just kind of teased it, like, oh, wait, we're going to go out of the ring. Whereas nowadays, you know, going out of the ring's expected. It's kind of weird at the things that people do not pop for today.
And they had a good spot there where they smashed heads to lead to that point.
Yeah. I mean, literally, the only moves that weren't rest holds or you know, whatever, have been his punches, the knee corner, a couple of hip tosses, and some body slams.
And that slam right there was a big one. He really chucked him.
Oh, yeah. It's like one of those Ezekiel Jackson slams.
But Buddy gets his foot on the rope here to break up the pin. It was a good near fall. I'll tell you, I have the announcer very low in my ears, and he's pretty good. I'm enjoying him, whoever he is. He's got a good cadence.
It's going to be funny to find out that the Chicago guy was, like, the worst announcer of his era.
Probably. I'll wait for Parv to let us know who it was.
That's hilarious. But I love, see, Buddy Rogers, even Nick Bockwinkel, you can tell where, like, Nick Bockwinkel got, like, a lot of his mannerisms. Because, you know, it's not just the blonde hair, but, like, God, the way he's begging off and and pleading for mercy from O'Connor. I mean, just Buddy Rogers reminds me a lot of that Nick Bockwinkel mannerisms that he would have. Or even Bobby Heenan. You know, Bobby Heenan would have those same mannerisms begging off in the corner. And
yep.
Not just the fact that he's begging off, but the actual way his face looked.
Mm-hmm. Another big slam, but again, Buddy gets his foot on the rope, and the announcer really getting into it now, saying how close O'Connor's been on two occasions.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested, man. This is like, you know, these guys were legitimate big stars. I mean, both of them held the title for well over a year, with O'Connor almost 3 years, right? Well, I know you've been doing your Fixing WWE articles at Place to Be, man. I mean, do you think that the lack of star power is the real reason why these shows are just cold now?
Oh, yeah. I think it's a lack of star power. I think it's a lack of consistency, like, to any kind of booking plan. And the biggest issue, and I really went on into all this, Kevin and I, last week, so I'll, you know, I'll direct anyone there if they want to hear it in depth, but you know, it's not must see. It's just not. Like, you can miss weeks on an end, and you could tune in, and it's the same. Like, there's very little must see, and there's so much of it. And not all of it is their fault, the saturation of high quality wrestling, but you can see, like, you know, three really good matches a week across different promotions any week you want, and there's so much other stuff available. It's just they're not making it compelling enough to, you know, eat your time up, and that's a problem. And you know, people can say, oh, the ratings are different because of this or that, you know, DVR and everything else, but it's still, you shouldn't have to DVR it. If it's a really good product, you'd want to watch it live. So to me, that slow leak and erosion of the fan base has to do with the product being not, you know, can't miss.
Yeah, just the mentality that, well, I'm going to fast forward through everything.
Right.
Except
you shouldn't want to do that.
Right.
I mean, I know the Truth Commission and DOA sucked in 97, but something crazy may happen during the match or on commentary or whatever, and I had to stay tuned just in case, you know. But I digress. So this match was picked up quite a bit here down the home stretch.
Well, you know what I'm looking, because Buddy's been ramming, O'Connor's been ramming Buddy into those turnbuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there is not a lot of padding on those turnbuckles, man.
No, definitely not.
I mean, you could take some modern turnbuckles and, like, take the turnbuckle pad off, and it might be as thick as the actual pad here.
So O'Connor gets another near fall, but Buddy again gets the foot on the rope, and the crowd's just going crazy every time. Although, you know, I kind of
like
to say, drag him to the middle of the ring every time.
Well, you know, like, well, I'm sure the crowd's thinking the same thing. Man, just put him in the middle of the ring,
right?
You know?
Keeps trying to pin him near the corner. Nice dropkick, too, by O'Connor. He's had a couple of those.
See, and his head got rammed into that turnbuckle.
That's got to be it. So O'Connor tried another dropkick, and Buddy ducked it and went flying into the ropes and smacked hard on the mat. That's got to be it.
I feel like I've seen a Raw match where that was the ending, you know?
right, I'm sure. O'Connor's really hurting here, but Buddy's doing the, if this is Triple H and Booker T, people would be flipping their shit right now with the way how long he's taking to roll over and cover him. But at least Buddy, Pat's selling it, rolling around, holding his gut. And it looks like that'll do it. Buddy Rogers retains the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. How are we on time, Dan?
Well, but Rogers sold it.
About a minute left.
All right. So if you had to give this thing a star rating, Will, what are you giving it?
I'd give it a thumbs up. Star rating, it's kind of hard because if I say 4 stars, well, 4 stars in what context? Four stars in the context of a match that would take place in 1961.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. And I tell you what, man, I'm not a fan of, like, really long matches nowadays. I kind of like matches that go between 15, 20 minutes and get the hell out of there. Talking to you guys, this really made this a breeze to get through.
It was. It flew by. I when we first started it, I was a little hesitant, thinking, this is going to feel like a long, trying to cover the spot. But it really cruised. It really cruised along. I'm with you. I'd say, you know, 3 3/4, 4 stars for that era. It was really well worked. Even the parts that were slow never really lasted that long, and they were, like you said, they were always working the holds, always making the facial expressions. The crowd was into it.
O'Connor's punches
were great, and the flurry at the end was really good too, with all the drop kicks and the near falls. They really structured a really good match, and you know, and even towards the end, I didn't know the results of this match, so I was I figured Buddy would win, but I was still, you know.
And you know, I thought O'Connor won this match. I thought this was when he won the title. What the hell do I know? So yeah, it surprised me too. I was like, nah, there's gonna be another O'Connor Raw. Oops, guess not. And hey, that's his own. It's his own fault for not dragging him in the
right.
Middle
he had multiple shots. Any thoughts from you, Dan?
Just echoing what you guys said. I mean, it there are times where you can go into even watching something from the 2000s or the 90s, and you know going in it's going to be 27 minutes or 31 minutes or something of that sort, and you just kind of dread watching it. I don't know why, but you just realize, oh man, this is going to be a real grind. This did not feel like that at all, and it really kind of makes me want to go out and search out other matches from these two guys. And see if it holds up with this match, because this was really a real treat, and I'm glad we decided on going with this one.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess our 30 minutes are up, huh, Dan?
Yeah, time's up. Sorry, guys.
All right. So that was a lot of fun. Hopefully everyone was able to watch along with us. If you weren't, you want to go back and check it out. Again, I linked it in the post at playstimulation.com, so you can head over there and visit it and watch the match along with us. So why don't we go to take a break? We'll check out some of the shows available to you on the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes, and we'll be back with challenge number 2.
About 10 of them, recruiting suckers, Mac and Mike, and making men of them. Tears and fears for my peers, they risen. You think
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. All right, Place Edition, we're back. Episode 14 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. Hope you enjoyed that list of shows there. Make sure you check them out. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes and also give us a rating, leave us a comment. That stuff helps us all out. We'll talk more about how you can help PlaceFedition.com in just a little bit. Will and Dana here. We got one challenge in the books. We watched Pat O'Connor versus Buddy Rogers from 1961, and I think we're probably going to move a little bit ahead in the second game, I would assume, but let's take a visit with Daniel and let us know what it is.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way,
Well, guys, I ask myself always, what if I was around for the last show? Would ratings have popped? Who knows? But with that said, let's play a little game of what if.
I don't know if you would have been back at all if you had been on that one. It might have been as bad as this. Okay, so what if? We haven't done it in a while. We did it, I think, at least once. We did very early. Actually, it was episode number one. What if Randy Savage had stayed with the WWF and gotten pushed in 1994? And we're actually going to stick in that time frame. We've done one other one. That was episode 7, What If Ted DiBiase Joined the NWA in 1987. So we head back to 1994 this time, Will. And what we're doing is we are saying what would have happened to the wrestling landscape if Vince McMahon had went to jail in 1994. So he gets indicted on steroid charges. And what we're going to say is he gets a 10-year sentence. So he's in the clink from 94 to 04. No parole, no commuted sentence, nothing. He's in there for this 10-year stretch of his life. The company already kind of hurting a little bit rating-wise, attendance-wise. Things are sinking. We're going to say he goes in the Slammer right after WrestleMania 10, because that's when the trial is. It's in the summer. So we can start our kind of our look at this, and we'll call it June of 94. Around King of the Ring, over in WCW, Hulk Hogan had just signed on, so they're building up to Bash of the Beach with Ric Flair. A lot going on over there. So we can look at both promotions, Will. We can look at the overall landscape. Would WWF had stayed in business? Would they have eventually sold? As we know, the story goes that Linda McMahon had been switched over to CEO of the company to get it out of Vince's name in case anything had happened. And then Jerry Jarrett was primed to come in and take over booking duties of the company. And it seemed like they were preparing to make it more regional. And that's always the rumor you hear as well, that if that had happened, they'd let Jarrett book, and it would be more of a Northeast-based promotion until either Vince was out or they kind of regrouped and got things going. So do you think that would have happened? Was the cat too far out of the bag in mid-94? Could they really have scaled back that level? And would Jerry Jarrett have been successful initially?
I don't know if they would have been able to scale back at that level. Okay. Now, to be fair, WCW was cold in 94 too. Nobody's lighting the world on fire for house shows, right?
Right.
I know Hogan popped the territory a little bit, but I think it was mainly on pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. My buddy Charles from Pro Wrestling Only, he could fill me in on that. I'm not that familiar. But I think the first thing we should just get out of the way, and we're looking far into the future here, Linda McMahon has no political career if this happens.
Right.
There are no Linda McMahon campaigns for senator, or was she running for House of Reps or governor or something of Connecticut or something? Or was it senator both times?
It was senator
both times. Okay. So that never happens, right? Because there's no way she's going to be able to say, oh, I was the CEO of this company.
Well, beyond that, they may never have the money to pull it off, because we don't know if they're going to be a success. Sure. You know, does the Attitude Era ever happen? Do they ever make, become a billion? Does Vince become almost a billionaire or whatever, multimillionaire? Do they go public?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know if any of that happens.
But then things like the XFL would have never happened, because right. I'm sure NBC Viacom's not going to want to get into business with this guy.
Right.
So, I mean, there's lots of things that we can – so we don't know what would have happened. We do know what would not have happened.
Right, exactly.
Okay. And some of those things would not have happened. And some of them might have been better for the company. You know, is it really a better thing that Vince had all this money to play with, that he opens up the World restaurant, or that, you know, he loses millions and millions of dollars for the XFL? Well, probably not. You know?
But on the flip side, is the company last? I mean, is it dead by the mid-90s?
Well, you know what? I do not think. I do not think that it dies. Because if there's one thing Jerry Jarrett has proven with Memphis, he can keep a territory floating on a shoestring budget.
All right,
he's one of the last guys to leave the territory business, get out of the business. And he was able to do it on a shoestring budget for a lot of years, well after Memphis's expiration date.
So you're a Memphis guy. You know Jerry Jarrett's booking well. What does he do if he comes in here in mid-94? So Bret Hart's your champion. Diesel's kind of being prepped as maybe the next big challenger. Shawn Michaels is on a little bit of a sabbatical, getting ready to come back. Razor Ramon is your IC champion. You got Bam Bam Bigelow. You got King of Hearts, Owen Hart on the way, if you want to go that route. You know, kind of looking at the landscape of the WWF in 94 and where they're headed into SummerSlam and towards the end of the year, into arguably their, you know, worst year, maybe until currently overall, creatively and business-wise. from a booking standpoint, where does Jerry go?
Well, I'm going to say that things get a lot wackier a lot sooner. And I love Memphis booking. But the great thing I love about Memphis is that they could do all the wacky things, the wacky skits and the wacky characters. But then, as we've seen, and you can watch this on YouTube, on the flip, they just automatically go into, uh-oh, stuff got real quick. You know, where, you know, they have these really nasty, bloody brawls in the studio that you weren't expecting, you know, where people just lose their characters and it's like, oh wait, this is a real fight. You know, there's a reason people kind of bought into that Memphis style for so many years, why it was so highly rated, is because it really was compelling television, especially when they got serious, you know. But you know, I mean, you got to look at the people that Jarrett surrounded himself with. You know, you figure a guy like Bill Dundee would have probably come in for creative for a little while. Maybe he goes with the staggered bookers like he did in Memphis, where, like, you know, in Memphis he would have Jerry Lawler book for a while, then he'd have Bill Dundee, then he'd go back to Lawler, then Dundee would come back, and then Dundee would go disappear, go book for Watts, then he'd come back later. So maybe he'd do that, except maybe he'd, you know, work out, you know, he already has a guy in what's his name, the Stooge, I'm drawing the great, one of the great wrestlers, Ray Stevens' partner.
Pat Patterson,
man. Why I could not think of that. That was horrible. Anyway, so you already have Pat Patterson there. You know, he's going to be like Vince's confidant, right? So while Vince is there hanging out in his white-collar jail cell, you know, Pat Patterson's going to be kind of the liaison between the two.
Right. That's always been the word, too, that he'll be kind of basically running things from jail through the
phone. Right. And so I could see that happening. I could see, well, you know, I mean, you got to think too. Remember, didn't Bill Watts come in 95?
Yes. Yep. Late 95.
So how does Bill Watts enter into the picture without having Vince over his shoulder wanting to change everything right then and there? You know? So there's a possibility Bill Watts would be able to get in. And all this stuff we're talking about is actual backstage possibilities, right? We haven't even gotten into the talent yet. But, you know, these are things I think are interesting to talk about. I mean, who else is there? I mean, I'm thinking Pat Patterson, you know, he probably relies, I guess Gorilla Monsoon's still there, right? Right? Gorilla isn't dead yet, right?
Yep, no, Gorilla's still there, and he was still, I think he was fading a bit. He was kind of more of like a trusted advisor. His commentary duties were slipping a bit. His son would pass away in July, so many say that's when the lights kind of dimmed for him as far as, like, the passion goes for the business. You know, I've heard stories from you know, guys like Kevin Kelly on our shows talking to Gorilla in those later days and how much he despised where things had headed at that time. So maybe with him having a little bit more say with Patterson, with the more of the old guard in place, you wonder how much they would have evolved. I mean, do they stay, not that Jarrett wasn't ahead of his time at times, but do they stay more tried and true to the, you know, old school style versus ever really stepping out? I mean, it took Vince a long time before he broke loose. You know, it took him into 97 before he even had the guts to finally pull the trigger.
Well, and that's the thing too, right? I mean, in 94, if he goes to jail 94, there's not going to be anything radically different. Like, they're not going to speed up the ECW style stuff, you know, two or three years earlier. I think they do this, what they did, which was they do kind of a holding pattern while Vince is in jail. Nobody's going to want to take real chances when Vince isn't there to oversee things.
I mean, is that the plan for 10 years? Do they at some point build a plan to grow? I mean, as WCW starts to build, you're going to think they get more aggressive. I mean, they were already aggressive as it was in 94, 95, but now if they see this, oh my God, Vince McMahon's gone. They're, you know, it's in the hands of a guy who's never run a national promotion. He's successful in Memphis, but can he do what Vince was doing? Does Bischoff really put the pedal to the metal? Does Nitro happen sooner? Do they do more to really make WWF backpedal even more? Does WWF respond the way they did? Did they go live with Raw for multiple hours? So there's a lot even in that. Do they retreat further back?
Right. I don't know, you know, what WCW would have done. Because you look, part of the reason WCW was successful was not just Hogan, not just the NWO, but this idea of going head-to-head with Vince, right? Mm-hmm. Going head-to-head with, you know, finally admitting that there's more than one company. You know, Medusa showing up and throwing the belt in the trash can. Lex Luger showing up unannounced. All of this stuff kind of generates excitement, not just for WCW, but for kind of the whole company. You know, I mean, for the whole wrestling landscape. You know, without, I mean, here's another thing to consider. You got to remember, Vince was bankrolling ECW. If Vince is in jail, there's no way he's bankrolling ECW
right.
in those tight years.
Yep.
So you don't have the ECW WWF connection. There's no way that Paul Lee's able to stay in business.
Well, say, do they forge more of a, you know, partnership between the two? Does Paul Lee reach out to Jerry and they start doing a talent exchange and trying to help each other out, help each other survive? So maybe not bankrolling, but more of a, you know, almost acknowledgement of the two of the existence, because, you know, in the territory mentality, that's not really outlawed as much as it was with, you know, under Vince McMahon. So do you start getting more of that acknowledgement out of the WWF that other things exist, other entities exist, where these people came from?
That's an interesting point, man. I don't know, because you also got to remember there's another guy out there who has his own promotion, and Jim Cornette.
Mm-hmm.
Do they, because Jim Cornette was already there managing Yokozuna, right?
Yep.
So do they lean more on Cornette? And I love Smoky Mountain Wrestling, okay? But I love it because it's kind of a throwback in an era where there weren't, you know, a lot, there wasn't a lot of throwback in that era. But I really think that Jim Cornette is outdated in a lot of his ideas. You know, I did not enjoy, like just for example, I did not enjoy Jim Cornette led ROH at all. Like at all. I didn't like Jim Cornette's OVW that much.
All right, but are his ideas outdated in 94?
Well, he had some fun stuff in Smoky Mountain, and he made it work. So I think he may have been able to make it work, help him get through 95, 96. But, I mean, if he's running Smoky Mountain in 95, does that company go out of business sooner so that he can cater WWF? Or does he break ties with WWF because Vince isn't there helping him out as well?
Right, and Cornette was a booker, too. I know at least in 96. I'm not sure how far back into 95 he was. I know throughout 96 he was helping book, I believe in 95 as well. So,
yeah, and the business wasn't hot then either. You know?
No,
and
definitely not.
I'm sure he didn't have very good ideas then either. You know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you think Bret Hart is Jarrett's guy? Do you think he just clamps down on him for a while and lets him run with the belt?
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that worked well with Lawler. I think you see...
I was about to ask that. What does Lawler's role become? Does Jarrett, well, you know, you start using him more?
I guess ultimately it depends on what Lawler wants his role. I mean, it's possible, like I said, they give Lawler the book, because that's a guy that Jarrett has trusted with the book in the past. You know, like I said, I think you start seeing an influx of those Memphis guys. Uncle Zeb with the Blue Brothers or whatever the hell the Harris twins were at the time. You see guys like Bill Dundee maybe migrate over. I don't know what the relationship was like at the time, you know. But, I mean, you got to remember at this time, a lot of the WWF talent that eventually would find its way on TV, they're still going through Memphis,
mm-hmm.
you know. They had just completed or just been in the middle of that whole USWA versus WWF war. You know, that kind of weird time period where Lawler was a face on Memphis TV, but he would be a heel on WWF TV. Then he'd go to Memphis and talk about how great Memphis is and how WWF is a garbage dump. And, you know, then he'd go to WWF and play up his heel persona. So I don't know, man. There's endless possibilities. What do you think is going to happen? Like, what do you think you would see happen?
Well, speaking of Memphis guys, and this ties back to one of our other what ifs, does Randy Savage get back in the groove? Do they need that star power because, you know, they're kind of a little bit rudderless and you don't have Vince trying to force him back to the sidelines to be the Babe Ruth of the WWF? And, you know, do they turn to him? Does he get in Jarrett's ear now? He sees an opening to get himself back in the mix. So maybe Savage ends up staying and gets a push. You know, do they lean on the guys they know?
Possible. Yeah. No, that's very possible. And you got to think, man, if you look at the people who went through Memphis, and here's the thing too, if a guy like Jarrett is in control, do people like Steve Austin or Foley or, you know, those guys that basically, you know, what do they always joke at, that they lost a couple of belt sizes
right,
working yeah. in Memphis? Because, you know, I guess ultimately if Vince is signing the paychecks and the pay is the same, maybe it's different. But, you know, there's kind of a reason that Jerry Jarrett's not in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, where Dave Meltzer lets a lot of these old guys or, you know, current wrestlers vote for the nominees. And that's because Jerry Jarrett was a penny pincher
mm-hmm.
and underpaid guys, you know. So I think you'd have to lean on those guys. Because if they're not getting paid, why would you go there when WCW gives you the sweet contracts and the sweet schedule? And especially if Eric Bischoff is going to open up the checkbook.
And I'm guessing we get a Jeff Jarrett push a little bit sooner than we probably would have.
Right. Jeff Jarrett, world champion, 1996, WrestleMania, book it.
Right, I mean, I'm thinking we're at least getting like a Bret Hart-Jarrett title feud, I would think, at some point at the end of 94. So,
easily.
Let's say Jarrett has a couple years run and they stay status quo. So we're dipping into 96, and we'll leave most of WCW's trajectory in place, I guess. I mean, does the NWO still happen? Does Hall and Nash get big enough where they can jump and get that money? I don't know if that happens. I don't know if Diesel gets the year-long reign. I'm not sure. I guess it comes down to how much is Vince allowing his minions to run the show, and how much is he still directing things from jail? I mean, that's the question, right? So, I mean, do we assume a lot of the stuff kind of stays similar creatively because Vince is still pulling the strings in the background?
15 minutes, guys, 15.
I'm going to say that with WCW, the trajectory would stay the same because Hogan's already left. Hogan comes in with his guys. We see the horrible Hogan era, right?
Yep.
Bischoff is still going to see the New Japan product, right? So that idea for the NWO could still be triggered. If Jarrett's tightening the wallet, you know, and they go into more regional or to a smaller scale of business plan, you might see guys, you know, bigger than a Nash and a Hall jump. You know, would Shawn Michaels stick around when, you know,
right.
You know, does Shawn even get his push in 96? I think he does. I think everybody that, you know, ever talks about Shawn in the business, not me, cause I'm not a big fan, but they always talk about how great Shawn is. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think his path is still there too. You know, do the inmates run the asylum? I mean, Vince isn't there, right? Usually Vince will fire somebody or make the hard decision.
Well, and that's kind of where I was headed with the Savage Point. And that's kind of where I was headed with the Savage Point too. You know, is he able to get in Jarrett's ear and convince him to get him back into the mix? Whereas, you know, Vince would have been a little more steadfast and not allowing it. Is he able to bend him a little bit more? So yeah, I think the politics would definitely start to come into play. I think that is what more than anything might have led to more people leaving, like guys that didn't like the Memphis crew. You know, if Jeff Jarrett does get a push, if Jerry Lawler does become more prominent, and you know, Brett's probably fine with that, but maybe that drives Hall and Nash out of there sooner. I don't know. You know, not real big Memphis guys either of those. So
no, neither one of them. And here's the interesting thing about that too. I think at worst case scenario, WWF can't compete right without Vince's vision or whatever. WCW might still have its success, but I think eventually they all go out of business. If Vince goes to jail, I think they all go out of business. I think at this point in time, Vince doesn't put his faith in guys like Stone Cold, Mankind, maybe Rock, but I think, you know, is it too far gone for Rock to come in and mean anything? Does a guy like Triple H actually go to the big time when the big time is the small time because it's being run by a small town promoter? I don't know. I you know, ECW, if the idea is that the WWF was funding ECW in 96 and 97, to kind of keep it afloat and keep generating talent, and for, you know, them to send talent down. I don't think that that partnership happens, and there's no way Paulie's going to be able to generate.
Well, so let me ask.
I think worst case scenario is there are no Monday Night Wars. There is no.
Well, I think Nitro happens either way.
Renewed interest.
I think we get Nitro either way because they want to compete. I think maybe we get it sooner. I think they may see the gap sooner. Maybe Bischoff goes to Ted quicker and asks for the time. So what about this? Jarrett kind of does status quo into 96. He's fading a bit. So I'm assuming Vince Russo still working for the magazine. He's still within the company.
Okay, okay.
And who's the voice? Who's the guy that really got Vince's ear and convinced him that they need to make a new, take a little bit different of a direction with the company?
Well, Russo.
Well, who else besides Russo was a big guy who pushed him?
Who was it? Kevin Dunn?
Nope, his son Shane. Shane was one of the big people that was in Vince's ear in late 97. And convinced him to go to the Attitude, the Shades of Gray, get a little bit more edgier. So does Shane ascend a little bit quicker? Does Vince think he's ready after, you know, almost being an apprentice for a while? Is he lined up under Jerry Jarrett for a couple of years? And then they ride Jarrett out into pasture and they say, okay, Shane, your turn to take over. Shane's got that same mentality. Does he, maybe not Russo, but I mean, I would think if Russo's kind of on the same mindset, maybe he still ascends. Does Paul Heyman then come on? You know, what's the trajectory of ECW then? Sure, they're not bankrolling it. Does he bring Heyman in and say, screw it, let's merge, you know, let's make WWF, we want to go this direction that you're going with ECW? And does it go even more without Vince's limits? Does it go a little bit over the top?
That scares the hell out of me.
Right? Well, do we get what WCW was with Russo, you know, without the filter? Do we get that with the WWF?
And the reason it scares the hell out of me is because, and Chris Zellner is the guy to talk to about this, from all reports I've ever heard is that Shane McMahon had horrible ideas, kind of like Tommy Dreamer's, like a horrible booker, right, like a horrible idea guy who keeps getting put into creative positions. From what I've heard, Shane McMahon is just as horrible, just as bad. And I think that anything that was bad on TV would be 10 times as worse with him at the helm.
Well, do we know? So maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's not the idea man, right? So maybe he's the Vince, and that's why he brings in Heyman. So, you know, we talked about, you know, guys like Austin and Mankind maybe not getting the chance. I argue maybe they get the chance in different ways that Shane brings them in because he's an ECW mark or it's a mark for that style. Hey, let's bring Cactus Jack in. Let's do some crazy stuff.
So maybe guys like Sabu and Rob Van Dam get a shot in WWF much sooner.
Right. Maybe they just ape ECW style and right to the pet fact that they bring it in or do it more of a talent exchange or the merger. So maybe they're not subsidizing them. But, we're assuming they're on a tighter budget, but they could still be making some money if WrestleMania still does well in each mark. You know, like the product was maybe stabilized enough to still draw a bit. If they do things right, because like we said, maybe a guy like Savage gets a renewed push and brings some interest, and you know who knows how things go. So he might still have some money to help Heyman out a bit, maybe not fully subsidize them, but enough to make it worthwhile to bring Heyman in on the booking committee, something along those lines.
Well, let me ask you: if Vince is in jail, what would you do?
If I were who?
If you were working for the company and you were entrusted to help Jarrett or whatever,
in like 94?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say, okay, I'd look at the roster and say, who is our most bankable known, and I'm not even saying as a draw, or as any, like, who is our most known asset that we can really trust not to do anything stupid, and he's over in certain areas, and that's Bret Hart. So I hunker down with Bret Hart. I make him my guy. I say, look, we're safe. Bret Hart's not going to do anything stupid. He's a safe worker. He's a safe, you know, person outside the ring. He's got a diehard audience in Germany and overseas, so we can still take advantage of that European tour, and we're gonna back Bret completely, and we're gonna feed him a steady stream of challengers. And we may do blips here and there, like, you know, Memphis, like Jerry Lawler was the guy, but how many times did he win and lose the titles? You know, it was like 75 times or whatever. So I mean, Bret Hart may still drop the belt here and there, but he's the guy we keep going back to every couple months. So maybe Jeff Jarrett gets the push. He never cashes in. But maybe Diesel does, or maybe Razor Ramon turns heel and he does, or Lawler maybe gets a war run and then Bret wins it back. But I think Bret is your guy. He gets the run that Diesel got throughout 95. He's the guy on top. Jerry Jarrett holds steady with him and just feeds him stream of after stream of heel challenger, and then we get the ascent of Shawn Michaels, and I think we still head towards them in early 96.
Do you think we get that? I mean, do you think Vince, even from jail, still has his man crush on Michaels?
Yeah, I mean, Michaels a guy that, right, he started it, or at least came through Memphis, and like you said, he had a good rep as a really good worker at that point. You know, whether it was fully earned, but in 94, he was pegged as an up-and-coming star. So maybe we don't get the attitude of Michaels that we'd get later, because I don't know if the click fully forms. I mean, it was starting its early vestiges in 93, 94, but maybe they don't get the power that they had, or maybe they get more power. Who knows, without Vince to keep them in check. But I do think Shawn is still pegged. I don't know if he takes the title and holds it for a year, but I think he gets pushed ahead. Because don't forget, as part of the fallout for all this is still the steroid stuff. Like, Vince is in jail for steroids, so they're still not going to go back to all of a sudden the big monsters. And Jerry Jarrett's going to probably do a little bit of the, you know, cartoony or old school looking guys, and then some smaller guys. So I think guys like Brett and Shawn still have to be the focus.
Okay. And so who's gone? Is there anybody that was brought in around this time that between 94 and 96 that you think, okay, there's no way in hell that they're going to do that? Like, they don't bring Warrior back like 96,
no.
Right?
Goldust doesn't happen, right? I mean, so maybe he comes back in just as Dustin Rhodes. So maybe that's another guy they bring in. I think Vader still comes in, because I think he gets fired anyway, so why not bring him in and maybe do a little bit more with him? One guy we haven't mentioned is kind of interesting just on his trajectory is The Undertaker. Like, you know, is that a Jarrett type of guy? Does he stay this mystical, you know,
I thought he was not a Jarrett guy, because he's one of those guys that was pissed off at the Jarrett payoffs.
Right, so does he leave? Does he jump when his contract was up in 96? Does he hang around for a couple of years and then bolt and go to WCW? Maybe he joins the NWO. So, I mean, who knows? I think he's one. I think he could potentially be collateral damage, The Undertaker, in all this.
5 minutes, guys. 5 minutes.
And also Nash. I don't think Nash gets his, I don't think Nash ever reaches the level he did without Vince backing him for that year. Because if Vince, do you think Jerry Jarrett stands behind, even if they give the belt to Diesel in late 94, does he stand behind him for a year if he's doing what he's doing?
If Vince from jail tells him to, yes. Yeah. You know, but I think, you know, what you're going to have are guys that were in Memphis that say, well, I didn't have a real good run with Jarrett the first time. Why would I want to go? So, yeah, I could see a guy like Undertaker being the guy that jumps, the third member of the NWO, right? Or
I think we can safely say, I mean, one thing we know that's not going to happen is we're not going to have Montreal, right? I mean, that's the one thing that absolutely does not happen, because they're not screwing him. You know, Vince is the only one that had the balls to do that at that point, or the gravitas to do it, you know? So I don't think Shane, I don't think Heyman, I don't think Cornette, I don't think Jet, like, none of those guys are going to do that to Bret Hart. So I think Bret Hart remains in the WWF through the end of his career. I think that's one thing we can bank on.
Maybe, but we also got to consider money. If Vince is tightening the purse strings, well, Bret Hart never gets that super contract that he got in the first place, the lifelong contract.
Yeah, but he's always said, I mean, that was a pay cut from what WCW was offering. He's always said the money, like, if you watch, or, I mean, you know, whatever, a grain of salt, but everything he's always said, or that's come out the time, was he wasn't overly concerned with the money. He just wanted an offer to stay, and, you know, because that was his home. He loved it there, and, you know, he probably would have still felt loyal to Vince even when he was in jail, you know? It's like, because nothing bad would have happened between the two of them. You know, he gave him the belt in 94, and then he went to the camp.
Yeah, so. And for better or worse, right, he's always been a mark for the business, right? Like, for better or worse. So
yeah, I think he stays. I don't think Montreal ever happens. I think Brett stays loyal. I think that's the one thing we can bank on. I think there's a better chance that Shawn leaves at some point for money versus
okay.
Brett.
Okay, I could see that. Now, what do you think of, like, the international flavor, like, so they see Bischoff bringing in the Mexicans and the Japanese guys. Do you think that maybe they try and do that a little sooner, or do you think they still go with the cartoony samurai?
Yeah, I'm afraid of that. I mean, again, I don't know my Memphis as well as you do, but from what I do know, they fed into the stereotypes just like anyone else, right? So I don't think we break out of that just yet.
It's a Southern promotion, all right. That's
so,
for sure.
I think we still stick with some of that. I could see them, though, trying to take more advantage of the European foothold. Like, I could see them retreat a little bit to the Northeast, because even if you look at, like, 97, what Vince did when he was really reeling, you know, financially, he went back to a lot of those smaller New England venues. He'd still run nationally, but not as much. If you look at a lot of the pay-per-views and Raws, they were either Canada or the Northeast, a ton of those shows. So you know, they may eventually kind of dwindle back to that, and then maybe they try.
And I know they did the Alamo Dome for Rumble 97 in San Antonio. So Sean's still with them. I'm sure they try and capitalize on San Antonio, which even in this day and age has been a really good market. Always a top 10 market for them, you know, in this day and age as a wrestling town.
And I'm curious if they do try and explore more into England, like I said, or Europe with a guy like Brett. Maybe they focus on British Bulldog too, because he comes back in late 94. So maybe they circle around those Hart guys and try and really grab a foothold in Europe with WCW expanding to Germany, Japan and Mexico. So maybe they say, you know, we're going to focus here where our crowds have always been super loyal. We always do huge numbers. They love Bret Hart. He's like a god over there. You know, Davey Boy Smith's a god over there. So, or maybe they go into Canada more often too. I think they just build around Bret. I really think that's what they would do until the next, like, big guy pops heavily, like, and maybe that's still Austin just because he's so naturally great. If they give him a chance to run with it, he could still kind of catch on. But I think Brett's their guy. I think Savage stays there and becomes active again.
And maybe cycle in a lot more of those guys that were around in the 80s.
Right.
You know, like have a Hacksaw Jim Duggan come in every once in a while. Have a who are some of those other horrible guys that popped up in WCW?
Honky Tonk.
You know, I guess the big thing is you got to kind of watch the steroid issue, mm-hmm. right? So you're not going to have guys like the Steiners ever come in. You're not going to have LOD come back.
Well, let me ask you this, since we got a minute.
Well, here's something that I think might have happened for the positive, especially with the Jarrett. I mean, you start creating tag teams because, right. You know, Jarrett was no fool. I mean, he knew how big the Rock and Roll Express got. Mm-hmm. He starts looking for those the babyface tag team. Maybe WWF puts a little bit more emphasis on the tag team belts.
So let me ask you this, with the little time we have left, give me your three guys that benefit the most from this happening and the three guys that are hurt the most.
That's hard, man. I wish we would have done some prep before the show, not because that's really hard. Let's say the guy that benefits, Eric Bischoff, that's number one. I'm going to say, let's say Bret Hart, just because, you know, we'll do that. And we'll say Jeff Jarrett is number three. Benefit guys that it hurts, any of the steroid guys, Stone Cold, because I don't think that unfolds the way it does, and even a guy like Mick Foley, I think, gets hurt by it.
All right, I'm gonna say I like the three. I agree with the three that benefit. I'd say if I had to expand a little bit more, I think Savage benefits. I think, well, he still did pretty well. I think he just, his career stays differently. I think Jerry Lawler benefits because I think he transitions from less of a jokey commentator to more of a serious heel. I think they use him in a different light. You know, I think Shane ascends quicker, and I think Paul Heyman somehow benefits in all this too. I think Undertaker gets hurt. I think Kevin Nash gets hurt a lot because I don't think he gets the diesel run, and I don't think he ever goes and becomes what he became in the NWO. So those would be my two guys I think that they get hosed the most. And I agree with you with Brett. I think Brett does. I think Brett's the guy.
Right on.
All right, guys. Time is up.
All right. It was a lot of fun time traveling back to 1994. So we're going to go ahead and take a breather. We'll check out what's going on the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. When we come back, we will do our final challenge. We'll do some mail, and then we'll wrap things up. For me to face. I climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only place to be nation podcast network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile and on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
We are back, Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, episode number 14. We've talked 1960s wrestling. We have talked Vince McMahon going to jail in 1994. One thing, Will, we didn't even touch on. What happens when Vince McMahon comes out of jail in 2004? Does he get back in the business? You know, what changes there? Does he ride off into the sunset? What if the company doesn't exist? Does he try and start a new company? Large butterfly effect there. Are lives saved? Are lives changed? A lot of stuff that can happen if that goes down.
I predict he gets genetically jackhammered in jail.
Okay. And does the Mountie join him? Still there from SummerSlam 91. So a lot of open questions there. But Dan, why don't you tell us what challenge number three?
Guys, your third and decisive fall is one of my favorite games. It's one of Basil's favorite games. We're just going to play a little game called 6 Degrees of Separation.
All right. So this is one I've been wanting to do for a long time. We haven't been able to really work it in. And it's very much like the old game that you might play on car rides and plane rides or whatever, the 6 Degrees of, you know, Kevin Bacon, or where you'll name a celebrity and tie them back to Kevin Bacon in 6 steps or less. We're going to do that with wrestling legend Harley Race. We wanted to pick someone that, you know, wasn't super easy, but he did transcend enough generations to make this game work. So how it's going to work is Dan has a list of wrestlers past and present across the board, and he'll be feeding them to us one after the other, and we're going to find a way to tie them back to Harley Race in 6 steps or less. And we put a couple rules in place because the world of wrestling is such a, you know, busy, you know, easy to cross paths in different ways. So what we've done is we are limiting the ways for us to connect these guys. So it can't just be they happen to cross paths in the same territory. They happen to be in the WWF at the same time. They had to have either had an in-ring interaction with Harley, an intimate interaction, you know, whether it was a management thing or however we want to say he trained them. It just cannot be that they just happen to cross paths. They had to have directly interacted, preferably in an in-ring state. Also, you can only use a connection to Harley one time. So, you know, if we start with Dan, who knows JT, who knows Will, who worked with Harley in a match in Memphis, we can't use Will again as the connection point to Harley. So we're going to try and really make this a little bit more difficult by doing that. So we're going to alternate back and forth. Dan will name the guy. Will will start, and then I'll take it from Will. Then Will will take it back from me, and we'll go back and forth until we either connect to Harley or run out of steps. And again, we can only use the connection point one time. So, Dan, why don't you go ahead and Will, did I miss anything there? I think I captured pretty much everything.
Thank you. Got it.
Okay. Dan, why don't you go ahead and give us name number one?
Name what number one on this very vast list of wrestling talent. Let's just start right off the bat with the franchise himself, Mr. John Cena.
All right, well, I'll let you start us off here.
Okay, I think I'm going to go with an easy one here. John Cena wrestled Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania something or other.
Yeah, it was WrestleMania 23. And Shawn Michaels, so we'll do an easy one for the initial display here. Shawn Michaels wrestled Vader at SummerSlam 1996.
And Vader was managed by Harley Race at Starrcade 93.
Okay, so There you go. One for one. That was easy enough. But we will also say that we cannot use Vader again now as the connection to Harley as his manager. So
that's correct. We can use Vader again, just not directly connected to Harley.
Correct. Okay. So, Dan, maybe can you just track if we get them right, but also track who was the connection point so we don't double up.
Okay.
So, who's number two?
Number two is one of my mom's favorite wrestlers, probably because she enjoyed people from New Zealand who licked people. Guys, Bushwhacker Luke is number two.
Okay. I'll start us off this time. Let's see. Bushwhacker Luke wrestled Jacques Rougeau at Royal Rumble 1990.
Jacques Rougeau wrestled Terry Taylor in Memphis. Let me do that because I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure he did.
Okay.
But Jacques Rougeau wrestled in Alabama, or no? Where are the Freebirds from? Georgia.
Yep.
Wrestled in Georgia, same time as the Freebirds. Can I say that? Or is that too vague?
No, they have to have interacted. That's the rule here. Can't have just crossed paths.
Why would you pick Jacques Rougeau? I know nothing about Jacques
Rougeau. I'm trying to make it difficult.
I know zero about Jacques Rougeau.
Come on, that'd be so many wrestles.
Here we go. Jacques Rougeau, as the Mountie, was defeated by the Big Boss Man at SummerSlam.
There we go. Now we're talking. And the Big Boss Man, when in WCW, fought Vader. And during those matches, Harley Race kept interfering and costing Boss Man his matches. So there you go. So Boss Man is now off the books.
God, man, that was hard. Don't ever pick Jacques Rougeau again.
I'm going to pick him every time now.
It's funny because on my initial list, it didn't quite make the cut. I had Raymond Rougeau, but now I'm kind of glad I didn't take I took him off the list and put Bushwhacker Luke instead. Guys, the next one is The Big Show.
Okay, well, you start us off.
The Big Show debuted against Hulk Hogan and won the belt. Is that true? Either way. Okay, yeah. How about this? Just to be safe so we can get Hulk Hogan in there. The Big Show was in a monster truck competition with Hulk Hogan.
Okay, and I think this is another easy one so we can knock Hogan off the list. Hulk Hogan wrestled Harley Race on Saturday Night's main event, threw him through the table.
All right.
Easy enough. Easy enough.
Ding, ding, ding. How about a guy we mentioned earlier? Has been around for quite a long time. How about the Dead Man, The Undertaker?
Okay. All right, this is a good one. So The Undertaker, let's see. The Undertaker wrestled Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania this year.
Wow. Bray Wyatt attacked Roman Reigns?
Okay. All right. That's a tricky one. I'm going to tell you where I thought maybe we could go with that one, but we'll do that after this. Roman Reigns is related to The Rock.
Okay. The Rock has a father named Rocky Johnson.
Rocky Johnson. How many steps we got left here? We got two.
Come on. On, Memphis, baby. Memphis.
All right, we got two left. Rocky Johnson.
Memphis.
I'm trying to make it difficult for you. Rocky Johnson. I'm going to put you in a bind. Rocky Johnson was tag team champions with Tony Atlas. Is this our last step, Dan, on this one?
I cannot.
Wyatt to Reigns. Reigns to...
Rock
to
Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky to Tony.
So this would be the last one.
Is it? You're gonna connect Tony to Race.
I am gonna say that Harley Race fought Tony Atlas somewhere, somehow, some way in the 1970s or 80s.
I'm sure he did. See, this is what I was thinking. I was gonna say Bray Wyatt is the son of Mike Rotundo. And then,
see, I didn't know we could do that. I thought it had to be in ring.
No, no, intimate connections. I said so. It could be family members. Okay. It could be trained. They were trained.
Sure.
So I was gonna say Rotundo, and then tie it in with like Wyndham somehow, and then get to Harley that way. That's where.
Yeah.
I was
see, headed. Once you said Rocky Johnson, my eyes lit up because one of Johnson's biggest.
You said Rocky Johnson.
No, I didn't.
I said The Rock.
Oh yeah. Okay, once you said The Rock, I thought Rocky Johnson, who had a huge feud with Lawler in Memphis in the 70s, which then Lawler had a 60-minute time limit draw with Race in 1970.
I was going to say Lawler, but I figured that was a layup for you, so I was trying to make it a little challenging for you.
I thought we're on the same team, man.
We are. We're going to make it a little challenging, though. All right, we'll give you Lawler. Okay, Lawler. There you go. Put him out. He's out now. Lawler's out. Lawler, Vader, and the boss are out. What else we got, Dan?
We just watched him not too long ago, Buddy Rogers.
Oh, Jesus. All right, God, Will, start us off.
Oh, Christ. Buddy Rogers lost the WWF title to Bruno Sammartino.
Okay. Bruno Sammartino.
Is that true, by the way? I guess.
Yep.
That is true. 22 days he was champion before Bruno took it and had it for like 2 million days.
So Bruno was in a blood feud with Larry Zbyszko.
Larry Zbyszko had a blood feud with Nick Bockwinkel.
Nick Bockwinkel was managed by Bobby Heenan,
who then managed Harley Race as the King in WWF.
There you go.
Is that good enough?
Perfect.
Good. So no Bobby Heenan connection now.
No, he's out.
A big favorite.
Before we get to this next one, Dan, who's out so far? Vader.
Vader, Bossman, Hogan.
And Bobby.
You said Lawler.
Yep, Lawler.
And Heenan.
And Bobby.
Okay.
A big favorite of the early days of the Place to Be podcast, guys. Ahmed Johnson.
Ahmed Johnson once kissed Goldust, or was kissed by Goldust, Dustin Rhodes.
Dustin Rhodes' father is Dusty Rhodes.
All right. Dusty Rhodes. I think of a good one here. Dusty Rhodes. All right. Well, let's do this to get this guy out of the way. Dusty Rhodes fought Ric Flair, Starrcade 85.
And Ric Flair won the title from Harley in 1983 at Starrcade.
Okay. So we get Flair off the books. So eliminate all the big ones here as we go. It's getting a little bit trickier.
The whole effing show, Rob Van Dam.
Oh, this one's easy. Rob Van Dam fought Dan Crawford in All Japan.
Dan Crawford was teammates with Doug Furness.
And Furness, along with Crawford, fought Toshiaki Kawada and Fuyuki as Footloose in the 1980s.
And you say, oh, we're on the same team. I thought we were on the same. I don't fucking know what these guys do.
Oh,
and there's an F-bomb for you.
I thought I was doing a podcast with Parv. My bad. Okay.
I don't know who Footloose. I'll let you finish that connection.
Well, why don't you tell me who, how about this? I'll give you a hint. Why don't you tell me who actually hired Kawada and Fuyuki? You should know that.
Who hired them in Japan?
Yeah. Who was their boss / wrestler?
Great Baba.
The Giant Baba.
Giant
but
Baba.
Close enough.
Great Baba. Listen to me. I'm all
sure enough.
I just listened to Exile Ambassador. I mean, Between the Sheets too, where they talked about Footloose. I literally just listened to it the other day. So I actually knew. When you said it, I actually knew who they were. I probably wouldn't have known a week ago, but I knew.
It's awesome.
Giant Baba.
Sure enough, Giant Baba and Harley Race traded the NWA title in 1980.
Brother, I said Baba. I didn't say Inoki, so I knew. I had a good, decent idea. It was him.
Good job. Good job. We did it.
So RVD to Giant Baba to Harley. Crazy.
His son, Great Baba.
This game's awesome. Be sure to download.
To be fair, this is how bad I am at wrestling history. I'm not even sure if it was Crawford or Furness he fought in All Japan. I just know it was one of them.
We connected them either way.
cheap plug alert, guys. Be sure to re-download from back in the day Kevin Kelly Show number 2, because this was our guest, AJ Styles.
Okay, AJ Styles.
That bums me out. I was really hoping you were going to say Kawada, but oh well.
I can't wait till we get to Dennis Stamp. So AJ Styles. Let's think of a good one for AJ Styles. He... All right, I'm going to put this back in your court. AJ Styles.
Come on.
I'm going to say he's a legendary three-way feud, including Samoa Joe in TNA.
Okay. Samoa Joe trained with John Cena in California.
That's a good one. John Cena had 2 WrestleMania matches. Put us right back where we were with The Rock.
Oh, Christ.
How many more do we got? 2 more?
Okay. No, we're good. We're good. Okay. The Rock was hired by Jerry Jarrett in Memphis as Flex Cavana.
Okay. Is this our last step? How many have we done?
Dan?
Styles to Joe. Joe to Cena.
Cena to Rock.
Cena to Rock.
Rock to Jarrett. Yeah, this is our last one. Did Jerry Jarrett hire Harley Race in Memphis?
He was the promoter of that Jerry Lawler versus Harley Race.
All right, there you go.
Match in 1977.
There you go.
So Jerry Jarrett is our link to Harley this time.
One. That was a shaky one.
Yeah, that was real shaky.
Well, I know I'm not going to doubt this next performer, guys. Bret Hart certainly wouldn't. El Dandy.
Go ahead, Will.
Let me think. This is hard. This is really hard. Okay. El Dandy was hired by Eric Bischoff.
Eric Bischoff had a match on pay-per-view with Ric Flair.
He did? Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yep.
Oh. Ric Flair had a match on pay-per-view with Terry Funk. Great American Bash 89.
That's a good one. Terry Funk. Terry, I could bury us so bad here.
This is super easy.
I could bury us so bad here, but I'm not going to do it. What do we got? 2 more steps? I'm trying to make it challenging. Terry Funk fought Junkyard Dog at WrestleMania 2.
And then Harley beat Junkyard Dog at WrestleMania 3.
Yep, there you go. Very good.
I thought you were going to go with the straight Funk Harley lot.
Try to mix it up a little bit.
All right.
So it goes JYD. I did want to say that Terry Funk's retirement match in 97 was refereed by Dennis Stamp, and they really put you in a bind to get the Stamp to race without Funk being involved. But
well, speaking of Dennis Stamp and Terry Funk, his opponent that night was Bret Hart.
All right. So Bret Hart is brothers-in-law with Davey Boy Smith.
And Davey Boy Smith fought William Regal at Halloween Havoc.
William Regal fought Ricky Steamboat at Fall Brawl.
Ricky Steamboat teamed up with Hacksaw Jim Duggan at one of the Survivor Series. Am I right on that?
Yep, 87. There Jim Duggan and Harley Race were both counted out of the ring at that same Survivor Series together.
Right on, brother.
Duggan's off the list.
All right, guys. Next on the list, one of my guilty pleasures from those MSG house shows, the big cat, Ernie Ladd.
I'll start this one off.
Okay.
Ernie Ladd lost the North American title to Brad Armstrong in Mid-South Wrestling.
Brad Armstrong. Brad Armstrong had his title match taken away due to an attack from Brian Pillman.
Brian Pillman had a really great match against Lex Luger.
And Lex Luger was managed by Harley Race.
Done.
Boom. They call him Prince Pretty, guys. Tyler Breeze.
Oh, God. All right. Tyler Breeze.
Are you kidding me?
All right. We got this one.
You got this.
Tyler Breeze is currently feuding endlessly with Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, man.
Come on. This is an easy one. We can get back quickly on this one. It's like a... I think I'm one of Dolph's early feuds. It was a really good match. A couple pay-per-views. You talked about it on your SummerSlam show, so I just listened to them.
Oh, really? I did?
Mm-hmm. It was a good opener, I believe, on a pay-per-view, SummerSlam.
Dolph Ziggler had really great matches with Daniel Bryan?
Now we can go that way, though. I was thinking Rey Mysterio. We can go with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan beat Triple H at WrestleMania 30.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, shit. It was the opener.
Yeah.
I watched that. That's
you,
right.
You've talked about it endlessly since, too.
Man.
Feeling all right?
No. I'm. Triple H was trained by Dominique DiNucci.
Dominique DiNucci also trained Mick Foley.
How many more steps do we have?
I think one.
Yeah.
So I have to connect Foley to Harley Race?
Yeah, it's an easy one.
Is it? Give me a clue.
Foley's biggest WCW feud.
Was with Vader, who was managed by Harley Race. I thought we couldn't do that. Could we do that?
Well, Harley interfered and like attacked Foley during the matches. So that's what we
during
said.
During the Powerbomb match.
Yep.
Harley helped pull the mat from the
right.
concrete floor when Foley got powerbombed. There you go. Sure.
Perfect.
So Foley's the connection, not Vader.
Right. Foley's the connection.
Okay.
We went from Tyler Breeze to Harley Race. I think that might be the most impressive one.
Guys, he's Buff and the ladies can't get enough. Buff Bagwell.
Man, Buff Bagwell.
He's also the stuff, I've been told.
Buff Bagwell teamed up with Scott Norton as Vicious and Delicious.
Oh, what a great team. Scott Norton challenged Randy Savage to a match on the first Nitro. Yes.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we're on Randy Savage?
Yep.
Okay. Randy Savage had a feud with Jake the Snake Roberts.
Jake the Snake Roberts had a big feud with Rick Rude.
Harley Race slept with Rick Rude's wife.
I think the other way around, Rick Rude slept with Harley Race's wife. That's probably the way you should have said it.
Oh, man, whatever. I'm just trying to buy time here.
I can think of two here for this one.
I got this. All right. So Rick Rude was tag team partners with King Kong Bundy in Memphis.
Is Rude our sixth step?
No, we're not that far yet.
Who do we start with, Dan?
I thought Dan was the one.
Buff went to Scott Norton.
Yep, to Savage.
Norton went to Savage. Savage went to
Jake. Jake went to Rude. That's our last step. You got to get Rude to Race.
Christ.
Oh, there's two easy ways.
I'm so stupid. Mm-hmm. Well, give me a hint.
The first way is that there were stable mates in the Heenan family in 1998.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. What's the other way?
Race was with Rude at... with the whole kerfluffle when Vader defended their title when Rude was hurt in 94 against Sting and Race came out and him and Vader defended the title for him.
They had a big argument. Okay. I don't remember that. I was going to try and get there through Manny Fernandez if you would have given me 12 steps, but that would have been too much.
I think we're going to need 12 steps after this game. All right, Dan, who's next? And by the way, so you can take out Rude directly in that one. He's that guy.
So Rude's the guy. Okay. The Mighty Hercules, guys.
The Mighty Hercules teamed with Coco Beware at Survivor Series 88.
Coco Beware was defeated by Buzz Sawyer in Mid-South.
Buzz Sawyer.
Come on, easy. Who did he have his most famous feud with? Blood Feud. All the aftermags.
Buzz Sawyer.
One of my favorites.
Teamed with Matt Bourne.
Oh, man. Killing me. All right. And Matt Bourne was partners with Buzz Sawyer. Back in world class. Come on, I'm going to go back to Buzz Sawyer. Oh, man. Matt Bourne wrestled... or teamed with Buddy Rose in Portland.
All right, so how many is that? We're at three. Buddy Rose fought Tito Santana when he was the Executioner at WrestleMania 1.
Did Rose fight Tito?
I mean, probably, like on a house show or something. How many steps do we have left, Dan? How many is that?
Oh,
I mean,
God.
You think at this point, since we ask you every time, you would just start tracking them, be helpful.
You'd think.
Who did we even start with? Shit.
Hercules.
All right, so we went Herc, we went to Coco.
To Sawyer.
To Sawyer. To Matt Bourne, to Tito. Yeah, you had to get Tito to race.
Were they opposite each other during a Survivor Series?
Yes, Survivor Series 88.
There you go. I knew that. No, nah, man, I was hoping you'd go Buzz Sawyer to Tommy Rich, who defeated Race for the world title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I told you, I was going to make it challenging.
You didn't fucking remember. Don't lie. And yes, that's an F-bomb.
Yes, oh, it bounces out the one from before.
I know.
Yeah, but I knew Matt Bourne wasn't the guy you were thinking of. I knew him. I was just trying to think of something complicated.
I just wanted to get a Tommy Rich reference in, and you ruined my moment.
All right, Dan, who's next?
Next up on the list is Jeff Jarrett. We talked about him earlier.
Jeff Jarrett... wrestled Mabel at SummerSlam 94.
Mabel fought Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash fought Booker T in WCW to win the tag team titles.
Booker T had a feud with Sting.
How many is that, Dan?
That's five names.
Okay, so we're going to get Sting to Harley.
Hold on, did Booker T and Sting feud? I just made that shit up.
They fought. They fought. Super okay. Brawl 96, I think they're on separate teams.
So yeah, JJ to Mabel, Mabel to Nash, Nash to Booker, Booker to Sting.
So Sting to Harley. We can't use Luger. Can't use Vader. Let's see, Sting. Can't use
Hold
Rude.
On. Did they, hey, can I help?
Yeah, you no? can help. We're friends.
Okay. Did they all appear in the same promotional videos with Cheatham the Midget?
Yes, there you go. Beach Blast 93. Very good. That was a good one.
So that's Sting to Harley?
Yeah, Sting directly to Harley on the beach. On the flip-flops. Beach.
Guys, what about the Berserker?
What about him?
I just wanted to use him on a show in 2015.
Toss. All right, Will, go ahead, start us off.
Is the Berserker the Nord the Barbarian? Same guy?
Yeah, yep.
All right, Nord the Barbarian was tag team partners with Jake the Snake in Mid-South.
Jake the Snake. Was blinded by Rick Martel.
I think I'm almost positive. I'm actually going to check right now. Rick Martel fought Harley Race in Portland, I want to say in 1979 or 80. Hold on. I'm going to check, okay?
Okay.
So if I wouldn't have said Rick Martel directly to Harley Race, who would you have gone from there?
We can go Martel. Martel to... Which I think I want to go from Martel. You could go Martel to... Martel was on a team with the Honky Tonk Man at Survivor Series 89, and then okay. Honky teamed with Harley at Survivor Series 87.
Mm. Okay. Well, it is true. Rick Martel faced Harley Race in Portland in 1980. Absolute fact.
All right, we'll knock them both off there, Dan. Honky Tonk Man and Rick Martel. We connected them both.
Okay. We saw a lot of guys that looked like him during that match in the live watch, guys. Vern Gagne.
Vern Gagne owned the AWA.
And?
Go ahead, you set it up. Who wrestled in the AWA that you're desperate to tie in? I'm giving you your moment back, Will. Who wrestled in the AWA?
Tommy Rich in 1989.
And then Tommy Rich defeated Harley Race for the world title. You happy?
There you go.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Christ. How many more minutes do we have, man? This is getting hard, Dan. I wanted this to be fun, not hard. Oh, this is like homework.
We got 2 minutes to go.
Oh,
and...
yeah, like six more.
All right, we can get one in.
How about what about Bruiser Brody, your favorite, your boy?
All right, so Bruiser Brody was in the
I hate him.
Was in the cage match with Lex Luger. The crazy cage match.
Lex Luger joined the Four Horsemen with Tully Blanchard.
Tully Blanchard was in a legendary team with Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson.
Arn Anderson was also in a legendary team with Ole Anderson.
We got two more.
Brody to Luger, Luger to Blanchard, Blanchard to Arn, Arn to Ole.
So I got to connect Ole?
Mm.
Ain't that a son of a bitch? Ole. Because I really wanted to do like a Black Scorpion thing, but now I can't. Ole. How are we connecting Ole to Harley here, Will?
Well, was he the booker?
Yeah, I guess we're going to say that.
Because I don't know of any like singles matches between the two, like offhand.
I mean, Ole booked 1990, and Harley came back for that little stretch of 90. I think it was at the Bash. Bash 90 he wrestled.
Okay, because I would almost guarantee that those two wrestled at some point.
Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll say Ole booked Harley in 1990 WCW.
All right, guys, 1 minute to go. The man who loves my smile, Matt Hardy.
Matt Hardy. Okay. Matt Hardy... Matt Hardy had his girlfriend stolen by Edge.
Edge's favorite wrestler was Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan had his big legendary feud with Andre the Giant.
I got one.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Andre the Giant fought Harley Race in Houston for the NWA title, and you can see it on NWAClassics.com.
There you go. Hell of a plug.
Well, guys, my next one's Tugboat, but we're out of time.
We'll start with Tugboat next time. So that was fun. It was definitely challenging. some interesting radio there. But I thought it was a lot of fun to do. We'll definitely one we'll revisit down the line for sure with someone else other than Harley. But really wanted to take a quick moment before we get to our mailbag, talk about PlaySimulation.com, because our holiday tournament spectacular round four kicked off today. We have 16 entries left of the greatest holiday fair, whether it be music, whether it be moments, whether it be movies, whether it be TV specials, anything to do with the holidays were dumped into this tournament. 128 entries, 16 remain. Get your votes in today. This thing wraps up on Christmas Day, so that's the time frame. So make sure you're getting in your votes whenever you see the new round go up before they come back down. Me and Scott had our Vintage Vault Refresh Series. We did Serenade's main event from 1-3-87. That's the big Hogan-Orndorff cage match, of course. Serenade's main event number 9. I had new thoughts, I think, heading into TLC 2015, looking at the ratings, looking at some predictions I levied out there for TLC, what I think they may do with Sheamus and Roman Reigns, and a few other notes and news as well. So check that out. Our new excellent WWE Network adventure, Stampede Wrestling, November 12th, 1978, is out as well. Of course, the Stampedes were taken down thanks to some kerfluffle with Bret Hart, but that we were able to squeeze one out before they came down. So check that one out. And it has the great Ed Whalen, of course. So we gush about him. Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. Check that out, too, in addition to all our podcasts.
Wait. Stop. Did you really just call him the great Ed Whalen?
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun. He did this one thing, right? There's a guy knocked down the mat. He lays on the mat and interviews him. Who does that?
Oh, it's awesome.
Come on.
I hate Ed Whalen more than any other announcer in history. I think he's garbage. I think he sucks. I think the fact that he cut up the footage, that he wouldn't allow blood to be aired or something that he deemed too violent because he was a one-man censorship crew, Ed Whalen can suck a dick. He's dead to me. He's dead in real life. Good for him. Adios, Ed Whalen.
1978 Ed Whalen's awesome. Scott and I talked Vengeance 05 with Mark Claire. Be sure to check that one out. And all the other podcasts on both feed, the PWO PTBN feed, the Place to Be podcast feed. And speaking of the holidays, if you're shopping on Amazon, which I know each and every one of you do, stop at PlaySimulation.com first. On the right-hand side, you can click the Amazon banner that takes you to Amazon. You can do all of your shopping right there. No additional steps needed, and you help out PlaySimulation to keep us up and running. So get your Amazon clicks in, and also on iTunes, get your reviews and your thumbs up in as well. We appreciate all of those things that you help to keep us going. So, all right, Dan, why don't you say we do 6 minutes of mail, beginning right about meow.
Hey, before that happens, I'd like to apologize that I never realized that Amazon thing worked.
No? Made it up all the time?
Well, no, I finally did it, and I do. I click the Amazon link from Place to Be Nation now every time I order stuff from Amazon.
And there you go, and we're seeing the windfall from all your purchases, so we appreciate it. Thank you very much. So, Dan, 6 minutes of mail.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. And gonna cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
Guys, Dick Clark wants to ring in the new year and ask you, what are your thoughts on how the WWE has done, good or bad, since 2011, which he considers the last of what they call a boom in wrestling popularity?
I mean, not well. I mean, their viewership is eroded. Overall, they're still profitable. I think the network, for its many flaws and starts and stops, is still pretty cutting edge and ahead of the game in many ways. So I give them kudos there. I think they've done well there. Overall, creatively, I think it's been a dip. I think they've made...
It's garbage.
They've had a lot of chances to really cash in on stuff that they never quite did. I mean, even... So if we're saying since 2011, Will, I mean, we look at even WrestleMania 29, like the biggest, highest grossing Mania of all time and all that shit, and they ran that Milquetoast Rock Cena 2 when they could have done something with Punk there. WrestleMania 30 went well with Bryan, but then you look the next year at the Rumble, how they kind of mishandled Reigns since. And I mean, honestly, you could point to the Rumble this year as like the real start of the downward trend. It's been pretty much a lack of trust from the fans since that moment. And even maybe if you want to say since like Fastlane, now you can argue they were proven right because Daniel Bryan's neck gave back out. But
You know what, man? About a year ago, I did a Fixing the WWE special on Place to Be. Do y'all remember I did like that little mini series of...
I think it might be almost 2 years ago now.
Okay, well, I'm going to revisit it because I think it still needs fixed. I think it's been abysmal, Dan. I think that match quality-wise, they still put on quality matches. But on TV, because nothing means anything and the crowds are so dead and everything's so sterile, you can't even like accumulate a bunch of like match of the year contenders on the television shows anymore. Where it used to be like, oh man, you're guaranteed to get like a match that would be in contention, like, you know, maybe that wild Cena Punk Raw match they had, or you know, like a really kick ass like Alberto Del Rio versus Rey Mysterio match or something. Like those don't exist anymore. Yeah, Cena, Cesaro, those just don't exist anymore without guys like Punk, Bryan there, and now with Cesaro being injured. I think the last match that really captivated me was when they showed Sheamus versus Rusev on the network on like a post show something or other. So those don't exist. So I would say it's been a big fail the way they push guys, pushed heel champions nobody gives a shit about. It's been abysmal.
I think just the way they botched the Reigns thing. I mean, they've turned him into a giant choker, and he's probably going to lose again Sunday. I mean, how can anyone get behind this guy if you keep just having him lose every chance? At some point, you have to pull the trigger. I think what they did at Survivor Series was not right. I mean, I like the League of Nations thing, but I think they would have been better off if Reigns just beat Sheamus and kept the title.
Okay, well, hold on. Let's get to some more questions. We can do a whole mini series on this, and we will. So let's move on.
Reigns should have retained the title. Sheamus should start a League of Nations.
Let's go.
Read my preview this weekend. Anyway, CFCW writes, guys, your wife finally gets fed up and with your wrestling obsession, throws out all your wrestling-related stuff. You divorce your wife, but what three items would you dig through the stinking, disgusting, disease-infested landfill just to retrieve for yourself?
All right, and that was a cross-faced chicken wing. I shortened it in the notes, but so props to him. Yes, I would divorce her, first of all.
I'd be in jail. She'd be dead.
All right, the first thing I'm saving, and it's pure sentimentality, because it's probably a stupid save, but I'm saving my original Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy, because it's in mint condition still, even though I beat the shit out of it for many years, and that thing's been with me since 1990.
Oh my God.
He is not going anywhere. He is not going anywhere. God. That is the first thing I go save, my buddy.
All right, the first thing I'm saving is my signed El Hijo del Santo mask.
Is my signed autograph John Walters personalized 8x10 count? That's easily replaceable. I'm gonna say, see, it's hard because I can't say it. You know, I'm no specific tapes or anything because everything's so readily available now. So like 15 years ago, I would have died if like all my tapes got thrown out. The footage of me in college calling a like indie show that came to our college, Killer Kowalski School put on a show through John, and that was like really cool. That's another treasured memory of mine, because at this point, like I said, anything wrestling wise we can recapture pretty easily, so I think you have to go sentimental.
Well, you know, I'm actually gonna go something that's not footage related. Jim Cornette's released a couple of awesome books. He just released a history of Louisville wrestling that I recommend everyone pick up. Just tons and tons of information in there, and of course his great Midnight Express book that like showed all of their matches and had great stories to go with it. I would, and there are also autographs, so I would keep the Jim Cornette books.
All right, my third will probably be, I have like a big bin of all my old magazines, WWF magazines, PWI, Wrestling Insider, like all that stuff I've had from the 90s. They're all in a bunch of bins. So I mean, that to me is those things are more irreplaceable.
Yeah, you know, I got so many DVDs and stuff that I can't just pick one. But a couple of years ago, one of my best friends, he actually bought it as a joke, but I still have it like on my shelf here. He bought me a toy Intercontinental belt, and it has the white strap.
Oh, nice!
You know, it's not like a replica belt. It's a literal toy.
Like foam.
No, it's like it's like plastic. Like the belt's made out of plastic, and the plates are made out of plastic. But I was looking at it, and I was like, my friend bought that for me. I think I would keep that.
There you go.
time for one more, guys. My buddy Goodyear writes, recast the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with professional wrestlers. Go.
Okay.
Christ.
Well, Kevin Owens must be involved because of the pizza.
Really?
Fat shaming 101.
Isn't one of them like a real like brooding loner who's like, whoa,
yeah, Raphael is the brooding.
All right, so that'll be Raven.
Okay, there you go. Raven's right. Yes, that's perfect casting. We need the natural leader, the natural alpha male. That's Leonardo.
Then, if we have a natural leader of a stable, why not?
It can't be like Flair or anything because it's not ostentatious. I think Brett may be a good Leonardo because he's kind of moody too. Like he feels like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. He feel like he owes it to Splinter to lead the Turtles to victory all the time. He kind of takes everything a little too seriously. I think Bret Hart's a good Leonardo.
There you go. Who are the other two?
We got Michelangelo's the party dude, kind of wild and wacky, and then Donatello is like the nerdy kind of like tech guy of the team.
Well, that would be Daniel Bryan, right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then you already said Kevin Owens for the pizza dude.
The party pizza dude. He's not a big partier, though. Like, Shawn Michaels may be a better Michelangelo. So.
Oh, well, I'm tired of Shawn Michaels. All right, well. Aren't these boring guys?
Adam Rose, guys, hello.
No, nobody wants Adam Rose on their team. How about...
Well, you can't pick Kevin Nash because he's already Super Straight Shredder from...
That's right.
And Sheamus is who? Rocksteady or whatever in the new one? Isn't that Sheamus?
Is he really?
Yeah.
Bebop or Rocksteady?
Yeah, he's one of them.
Yeah.
And now I know what song we're closing the show with, by the way. Rocksteady. We're gonna rock steady.
Rock until the break of dawn.
Ninja Rap would have been a good one, too.
Yeah, that's a good one. So a guy who's known for his partying has to be New Jack, right? He's from the streets, like the Turtles.
I like. Let's just call Kevin Owens to the pizza.
No, it'd have to be RVD, bro.
RVD is a good one.
RVD,
he's
yes.
He's eating pizza with the munchie. So how about Rocksteady's going to bring us into this segment, and no one's going to know why, and now it'll make a lot of sense. And then we're going to rap with the ninja rap. That'll be a lot
of
fun.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And time is up, of course.
Perfect. All right. That was a fun episode, guys. A great time, as always. Hope everyone out there enjoyed it. We'll be back in a couple weeks, and Dan, with episode number 15. And Dan and I will be back on Monday night with a new episode of the Kevin Kelly Show. Will, you'll be on the reaction beat. Do we know who's in the crew yet for Sunday night for TLC?
Dude, I never know, man.
Okay. Well, we never
know. I'll just, I don't know. I got really criticized for calling Johnny Sorrow a fucking idiot on the last show.
Another F-bomb. Mark it down.
That does not count. It was not during a challenge. Sorry, suckers.
Right. It's a quote anyway. I'll let it slide.
And I was quoting. It was a quote. All right, so I have to apologize for that. A couple of months ago, I got criticized for cutting guys off too soon because I wanted the show to last less than 3 hours.
You're good. The show's perfect. You ask who you want to ask.
So this time, I am going to limit the show to under 45 minutes.
Well, if anyone's going to be in the house, we have a large crew that's going. 12 of us will be there. In Beantown on Sunday night. So be sure to stop by and say hi, or just shoot us a Facebook message or a tweet or PWO, wherever you want to contact us. Let me know and we'll be sure to meet up with you. We have a big crew, including Dan. We'll be riding up in the van. We're going to watch some football during the day and then head inside the TD Garden for some TLC action. So with that said, for good old Will from Texas, for Dan, I am JT. And as I quote Jake the Snake's daughter from Be on the Mat, fuck you, daddy. It's a quote. I can say it. Yeah. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Villains, you better run and hide, because one day you might not slide. So choose your weapon, don't slip. Vanilla's in control with the effect of a mic grip. Rocking the crowd the way it should be rock, with the Miami drop that you like a lot. You know it's hidden like a ninja turtle. When the bass kicks in, you better check the level. The power of a ninja is strong, fighting all creeps until they're all cold gone. Go, go, ninja, go!